This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us. We talked last week about men's health. This week, we're going to talk more about teenagers' health, in particular, scoliosis. It is Awareness Month set aside for scoliosis, and we're going to be talking with a Geisinger doctor today about the condition and its prevalence and its treatments. Dr. John Deegan is a pediatric orthopedic surgeon at Geisinger. He operates in Muncie and State College locations. Dr. Deegan, thank you for being with us. Beginning with scoliosis, can you define it? What exactly is it? I mean, we think of a curved spine. Is there, you know, anything else we know about it?
Yeah, so when we talk about scoliosis in terms of the most common type, it's something we call adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. Adolescent, the definition is pretty obvious, but idiopathic just means we don't really know why it happens. We don't know where it comes from. We have some clues that there's a genetic component to it, but it's what we call multifactorial. So, you know, there's probably environmental, factors that play in. There's a lot of factors that we just don't have a strong understanding of exactly where it comes from. But we do know there's some type of genetic component to this, and you know that kind of separates it from the other causes of scoliosis, like congenital scoliosis, which is happens in utero and as a baby when the bones just don't form right, and some other types like neuromuscular scoliosis, where a child with cerebral palsy or some type of muscle imbalance that's really strong pulls on the spine and malaligns it. So so that's kind of the general definition, but from a mechanical basis, it's a three-dimensional deformity of the spine. So it's not just, you know, what we think about with the side-to-side bend, kind of that S shape. It also involves rotation of the spine and kind of a change in the plane from the side. So if you're looking at a person from the side, their back is typically more kind of flat as opposed to having the normal contour that you would expect. And so, you know, what it comes down to is to be diagnosed with scoliosis, the curve has to be 10 degrees or more, because, you know, all of us walking around have a little bit of asymmetry to our back, you know, whether it's, postural, we like to stand on one side. Some people have legs that are a little bit different lengths, so that causes their pelvis to be a little bit shifted and that, but to be diagnosed with scoliosis, it has to be 10 degrees or more. And that's kind of, our cutoff.
Now, is it just teenagers who get this, or can somebody develop it later in life?
Most commonly, it's teenagers. And, you know, we do see occasionally in young kids early onset scoliosis. So to go back, 10 to 18 years old is the most common time that this is diagnosed and that scoliosis develops, because it has a lot to do with, you know, what stage of growth they're at and that growth spurt they go through as adolescents. But it can be, you know, it can show up in little kids and babies. Sometimes we call that early onset scoliosis if they're less than 10 years old. And then if you're an adult, it's typically either, the diagnosis of scoliosis wasn't made when you were an adolescent. Nobody noticed it. Or it's something called degenerative scoliosis, which happens. That's another category of scoliosis that doesn't necessarily have to do with adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. So that typically comes around, you get arthritis and things start to tilt, and that can become a vicious cycle where, as things break down, they tilt more type of deal.
And how do we screen for this? I mean, I guess they used to do it in schools. Is that not a thing anymore? Or do your regular doctor physical, is that something they check?
Yeah, so typically these days it's your yearly physical. They check your back through a test called an Adams-Ford Bend test, And it's pretty simple. They just have the child stand in front of them with their feet together, and they bend down and try to touch their toes. And that's where, understanding the three-dimensional aspect of scoliosis comes into play, because when you do stand, or when you bend over to touch your toes, you can see the rotation through either the, what we call the thoracic spine. You can see one side elevated up there, or one side elevated and rotated, through the lumbar spine. And that's usually their first clue. We did used to do school screenings. Recently, within the last 10 years, our academy decided that they couldn't, they couldn't recommend that based on data, as well as they weren't sure of the risk-benefit ratio of that. So that's kind of gone away. There's still some schools that do it, but.
Okay, but being aware of the child has an issue is the big thing. So what can parents try to observe to see if there could be an issue?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, a lot of these kids come in and the parents are, they feel guilty because they haven't noticed anything. And then they come into my clinic and their child has a curve. And they say, what did I do wrong? And it's really, they've done nothing wrong. Most of these kids, even if they're in a bathing suit, you can't really see that they have a curve unless you know what to look for. So it's a great question. Some of the subtle cues are the shoulders, if the shoulders are tilted one way or the other. So if your right shoulder is a little bit higher than the left, sometimes if you're looking at the chest wall, there's some rib asymmetry, meaning one side of the ribs is more prominent than the others. Or even if the collarbone or the clavicle, if you look at that, sometimes you can see one side of that is more prominent than the other. And other subtle things to look at are, do they stand on one leg consistently, kind of leaning to one side consistently? Those are all things, if they're noticed, it wouldn't be a bad idea to bring up to the pediatrician. For the more severe types, it is a little bit more obvious. When summer comes around and they're swimming, you can typically see some type of asymmetry. But as far as what parents should look for, I think the best thing is to just ensure that their pediatrician is doing a screening every year. And if there's any concern with any of those subtle things, to bring it up.
All right. And I think anybody that knows anything about scoliosis thinks of the solutions being braces or surgery. Is that really the only things?
So they've progressed in some ways. In some ways, there's some tried and true stuff that we've used for years and years. A lot depends on the severity of the curve. So, we talked about 10 degrees being the cutoff for diagnosis of scoliosis. Typically, from 10 to 25 degrees, we just watch kids, especially while they're growing. We observe them, bring them in every 6 months to a year, depending on where they're at in their growth cycle. And we get an X-ray and we see if there's any progression. Once they've hit the 25 degree mark, that's typically when we start talking about bracing. And braces back in the day, they used to be these big bulky things, big metal contraptions that go up around your neck. It's pretty obvious you were wearing them. And this is kind of a tough, it's really a perfect storm because it's that age where kids are really sensitive and they're really, I know there's a lot of kids out there looking to pick on any little thing that's different about a kid. And so it's tough to get kids to comply with the brace. But the new style of braces are more of a clamshell polymer plastic that can very easily fit under clothing without being obvious. Now, compliance is still a big issue, and it's the most important thing for whether or not a brace can help. And really, the goal of a brace is to, for kind of that 25 to 45 degree range, to try to slow the progression. It's not to make things straight, and it's not to correct the scoliosis necessarily, but it's to slow the progression while they are growing. So while they're growing, that's a good option. And 10, 20 years ago, we used to say, we don't know, braces might work. They certainly won't hurt. We now have really good evidence that braces used consistently really help to slow progression and can decrease the risk of surgery by as much as 80%. So, and then, once you get to the surgical criteria, and that's always the trickiest thing because these kids, most of them don't have any problems right now. They have a curve. It can be pretty significant, and it can be pretty obvious. But as far as back pain and other issues, they don't have them at this point. The concern is their curve will continue to progress into adulthood, and trying to fix it when they're younger is much less risky than trying to fix it when they're an adult with a big stiff curve. So once we pass that 45 degree to 50 degree mark, that's when we start to have the discussion about surgery if they're old enough and if the curve appears to be progressive. And the tried and true type of surgery is something called a posterior spinal fusion, where we use a series of rods and screws to straighten the curve and then keep it from moving again. That is, like I said, the most tried and true, the most studied form of treatment surgically. And with modern techniques and with paying attention to a lot of the parameters that we pay attention to, kids do very well. In the past, we had issues with, down the road, things wearing out above and below the fusions. But like I said, with modern techniques and with modern considerations on correcting certain parameters, kids do very well long term, and we have really good long term data to support that. There's newer techniques, less invasive ones, something I do called a vertebral body tether. That's a fusionless surgery. So the idea is we actually have to go through the side instead of through the back, and we put a series of screws into the spinal, into the bodies of the spine, and then a really strong rope that acts as an internal brace and attempts to harness the growth remaining in that patient to straighten their curve. It's technically an experimental technique. It's FDA approved for humanitarian use, so there's good evidence for it, but it's not the long-term data isn't there, and there are there's a higher rate of reoperation and stuff with that type of surgery because it's not you're not definitively fixing something. You are trying to essentially predict how much growth they have left and predict how straight you can get them with that technique.
As the spine curves, is this causing other problems other than just you being, like we said, asymmetrical? I mean, can this
Yeah.
impact organs and so forth?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the main thing as a kid is the asymmetry. They typically aren't severe enough that they're having any compromise of their lungs or heart function. But once the curve reaches a threshold of about 70 degrees, what we call pulmonary function tests start to suffer. So the capacity of the lung to be able to expand starts to suffer. And at about 80 to 90 degrees, the heart has to work harder to pump blood to the organs. And so that can be a big issue, especially in the kids with really severe curves or kids that the curve continues to progress after they're done growing. And so those are some of the things we're trying to avoid by preventing the curves from getting really severe, if that makes sense.
Alrighty. Now there's people talk about, are always looking for alternative things. Is there any truth to any of the things like, yoga and Pilates that can improve it, or is that just wishful thinking?
Yeah, so what I can say is we don't have any good evidence on any of that. Now, we do have some limited evidence from other countries on something called the Schroth technique. It's SCH ROTH. And it's actually called the Schroth method. It's a physical therapy that's kind of the goal is to work on the asymmetric muscles and work on something called rotational breathing. So essentially the goal of that is to avoid bracing, as opposed to straighten the curve. So technically what they do is it's almost everyday physical therapy, and they work on the muscles that we don't typically work on to improve the symmetry of the spine. What I will say is they have limited evidence of the efficacy of this in Austria and Germany, where it initiated, and we have not been able to replicate the use of that in the United States. There's also something called the SEAS technique, like sailing the seas. I'm not sure what the acronym stands for, but it's a similar dynamic type of physical therapy that does, similar philosophy anyway. Same thing, we don't have any good evidence on this. We don't have any well-done studies to support efficacy. And so what we do have is we have really good bracing data and really good studies that are randomized and prospective on braces. And the limited evidence we do have does support combining bracing with one of those techniques. So essentially, there may be some benefit to adding one of those techniques to a brace. And just to reemphasize, all this applies to a growing spine. Once the spine is done growing, braces, these techniques, they have not been studied at all. And braces have been studied, but they work on a growing spine. They don't work after the spine is done growing.
Okay. Being Awareness Month for this, there's probably a lot of people, more than some of these topics I address. There's probably a lot of people that could be impacted by this. What's the number as far as how many kids out there could potentially have this or get it?
Yeah, so it's fairly common for scoliosis. So a curve of less than 30 degrees, it's about 3% of the population. And less than 30 degrees, the ratio of girls to boys is pretty similar. It's about 1.5 to 1. Above 30 degrees is where it gets interesting. That's only about 0.4% of the population. And that ratio is about 9 to 1 girls to boys. So it affects girls a lot more than it affects boys. And it's for these more significant curves, it's a lot more rare, put it that way.
Alrighty. Now, just in closing, can you just give some kind of a reassurance, or how you would handle a 12-year-old kid that finds out there is a problem and they don't know what to expect? Is there kind of a tack you can take there?
Typically, if a 12-year-old with a curve comes into my office and say it's a 35-degree curve, they didn't know they had scoliosis. The family's concerned, the child is concerned. What I typically tell them is everything I told you about scoliosis and treatments. I talk to them about, scoliosis, and I tell them that bracing works very well. Bracing in your category at your age has about an 80% chance of preventing surgery, especially if you wear the brace consistently and you wear the right type of brace. But there are 20% of kids that do progress to needing something done. In those kids, you can get back to a functional lifestyle. You can get back to doing things you want to do. It is a time period where you have to rest, but with our modern techniques and our modern ability to take care of kids with scoliosis, we can get you back to doing everything you want to do.
Thank you, Dr. John Deegan of Geisinger, for joining us on the WPGM Community Forum today. We've been talking about Scoliosis Awareness Month. We appreciate the information, and we appreciate you, the listener, for tuning in. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.